WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
You're a good man, Charlie Brown. You're good at what you do, too.
She is Natalie Jacobson.
You are the dean of South Shore Broadcasters.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
Best-selling author, Dave Wedge. You got to say that.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mayor. Yes. Thank you. Wonderful to be here. Kevin's been a long time. Thanks for all you do. All you know, your local news icon. We appreciate it.
Kathy's doing a great job at this. And I've decided she's jelly. I got to be peanut butter.
There was a debate about that.
You fine with jelly?
I'm fine with jelly.
Okay, good. Jelly spikes my sugars.
Good evening and welcome to Monday Night Talk. As you know, I am not Kevin Tachi, and I'm going to be your host for the first hour.
Massachusetts State Auditor Diana DeZoglio. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
It's great to be back. Thanks so much for having me, Kevin.
Jermaine Wiggins, member of the 2001 Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. Welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Oh, thank you for having me. Anytime.
Not just economic development, but it's how to get the businesses involved.
Senator, I want to thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate you being a voice bringing so much community news to folks here on the South Shore.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD, and my name is Kevin Tachi. I'll be with you until 8 p.m. So we have a full show of conversations. Give you a quick rundown, and then we can jump right into our first guest, who is actually awaiting, looking forward to sharing information and discussing some of the things that are going on up at the State House, talking about, of course, none other than State Representative Dave DeCoste, representing the 5th Plymouth District. He'll be joining us in just a moment. Then we'll speak with Leonel Andre and Frank Saltz, and they're going to discuss efforts to secure statewide rights for rideshare drivers. And we'll talk about what the ongoing efforts are in order to be able for rideshare drivers to be able to unionize and be able to get benefits. We'll talk with them about that. Hour number two, we're going to speak with Sean Murphy. He's a candidate for the Governor's Council District 2 seat. You scratch your head just like when we ask what a county commissioner does. What does a Governor's Council member do? We're going to find out about it. Find out what some of the issues are. And then we'll close things out, a little bit of a crossover between Monday Night Talk and Miles on Motorsports. We'll speak with host and executive producer Miles Heger, as well as Paul Scally, and we'll talk a little bit about Miles' show, how it came to be, their interest. If you haven't had a chance to tune into Miles on Motorsports, it's not your ordinary show. These guys talk about everything open wheel, truck series, what's going on with, you know, with NASCAR, points, you name it, as well as having different reports about different races that are upcoming. We'll talk about that, get to the bottom of how this show came to be and why you should tune in. So that's all coming up after 7 o'clock. So we'll turn our focus right now and welcome in Dave DeCoste, representative. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Kevin, how are you?
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Hi from Florian Hall. We're down here at a fundraiser. Well, not a fundraising, a gathering of local firefighters, actually probably Eastern Mass firefighters. So hello from the Hanson, Norwell, Rockland, and Hanover fire departments as well. I've seen a couple of them in here. It is loaded.
I also forgot to put a title, or at least to mention, in regards to Representative DeCoste, as he has a new cable show called Crosstalk, the 5th Plymouth District edition, with State Rep Dave DeCoste. And Dave did a debut episode a few weeks ago and is planning to do more to keep people up to date on some of the things that are going on in and around his district and up at the State House, things that people care about.
Yeah, a lot happening up here. A lot happening in the district as well, and in the county.
Well, probably the first thing I have to ask, and that is, you know, we're less than a week since we had the presidential primary election, and I know while people's primary focus was on voting for presidential candidates, for, you know, respective parties will vote for, but there was also state committee races, and I I'm pretty sure you were somehow involved, or whether you were a candidate or were working with candidates who were trying to be members of the state committee, the Republican state committee.
Right. We had the way that works, and it's a little arcane on the Republican side. The Democrats are a bit broader in whom they include in their state committee, but the Republicans basically will elect a committee man and a committee woman for every one of the Senate districts. So, in fact, there are 40 committee men and 40 committee women. And we, in our district, I believe it's the Plymouth Norfolk district, is Patrick O'Connor's Senate seat. And, of course, that includes everything from right along the coast. So it would go from Weymouth and Hingham, including Norwell, including Cohasset, Scituate, Hull, Marshfield, Duxbury. I think that's eight.
And so, I mean, I thought I saw your name as one of the individuals that could be voted for.
Yes. They actually quite a bit of money spent. But they had an election. In our case, I will be state committeeman for our district, along with Janet Fogarty, and I think that people will see much better organized Republican Party going into the next few years. I think basically that was what it was about, in my opinion. So I think we've got a good group of people, and we're going to get along a little bit better and be focused on electing good government senators and representatives, and certainly governors, counselors, and everything else.
Let's talk about the importance of the state committee, and I mean, where do things stand for the Republican state committee? I mean, is it just at the foundation and building upwards, or are things well in progress, you know, when it comes to trying to gain seats in the legislature and other municipalities around the Commonwealth?
Both. I think in some counties the state committees are working well, and others not so much. Collectively as a group, they're working okay at the state level. Could be room for improvement. I guess there always is, but there's some major aspects that needed help, and I think they're going to be addressed. Locally, you mentioned the county, though. I in a long time, and I know you've been watching this area of the state for decades, and I have never seen as many races come up just in locally, starting down at the Cape with Representative Fernandez and Representative Murator will be running for the Senate seat that, among others, will be running for the Senate seat that Senator Moran's stepping down from, who was previously held by Vinnie DiMaceto. So you've got three seats there that are opened up. Then you go north, adjacent to mine, the Plymouth 6th, which is two-thirds of Hanson. I have one-third. And Pembroke and Scituate and a little bit of Marshfield and Duxbury. I think one precinct in Halifax, if I'm correct. But in any case, it's spread out a bit. And the bottom line is you're going to see that was Josh Cutler's seat. You'll see a race there. Mm-hmm. Jerry Cassidy, seat over in Brockton. Rep. D'Amelio's seat over towards the Bridgewaters, down towards the South Coast with Representative Schmidt. Also in the Taunton area, Senator Pacheco stepping down. And then there are a number of other representatives in the Republican and Democratic side who are stepping down. So it is a significant turnover. Just seems a lot more than usual.
Why do you think that is? Why are we seeing such a high level of turnover at this point? And are you surprised and are you concerned knowing that the Republican numbers are down? They've dwindled over the past 2 to 4 years, you know, without any kind of a rebound to at least regain or claw back a few of the seats.
Yeah, well, you put that quite well. I am concerned. We've basically gone from 35 to 25. And for those people who think it's a bad idea to live in a one-party state, the GOP should probably represent that. The good news is that we have some really, really excellent candidates lined up for all of the seats I mentioned and many more across the state. We actually added a senator in a special election out west in Worcester County, and we backfilled. That was filled by Representative now Senator Duran and Peter Duran, and his seat was taken by another Republican, John Marzi. So we're on the upswing, and I think that has a lot to do with the current chair, Amy Carnevale, who is doing a great job, in my estimation, with the GOP.
Let's turn our focus to how things are going at the State House. Financially, we are in the middle of the fiscal, where the governor's already put forth her budget, and now it's going to be on to the House, I believe, in the middle of April. What are the discussions that you're having with some of the municipalities? What are the concerns about local aid? Are we going to be looking for, are they going to have to worry about cuts and Prop 2.5 overrides in order to be able to meet their fiscal 25 budgets?
Yeah, I hope not. I think some towns are, and it's obviously a town decision, so I'll leave that to the town leadership to explain each individual town. I hope not, because I'll tell you one thing that really come to a conclusion is that people here are taxed enough, particularly to the extent that people are paying just very significant property taxes, and that is especially tough on our elderly population. But the way the budget works generally, Kevin, is that every year we'll come in and we'll begin on the Monday after Marathon Monday. And for that week after Marathon Monday, we'll start, actually for the legislature, quite early. They will start looking and examining the budget on Monday, Tuesday through Friday. But we have been told, be prepared to stay on Saturday. Don't make plans, because it may extend that far over. There's, to your point, not the money we had even a cycle ago. By that I mean 2 years, and certainly not the money we had over the last 5 years or so. So there is going to be either tax increases or significant cuts. You mentioned chapters. Generally, Chapter 70s can be, the quick description would be it helps town operations. Chapter 90 money is primarily roads, and a lot of that is distributed to a formula, as is Chapter 70. Our formula for Chapter 70, I think most of us in the South Shore would agree that it really discriminates against the suburbs. It absolutely is a redistribution formula. And that is exacerbated by the fact of the current problems we're having with the asylum seekers or illegal immigrants or combination thereof.
Do you feel that there's going to be enough of a conversation to talk about how much money of the fiscal 25 budget is going to be dedicated to the migrants who are living here, that are coming to the state? And caring for them, knowing that we also had to, the governor had to make cuts. She made 9C cuts, and it affected certain areas. I thought I saw something in regards to the PFFM. The firefighters were questioning some of the cuts that were made because they affected fire departments and other areas of need in certain municipalities.
Yeah, in my district, for instance, both Norwell and Rockland took 50% cuts to earmarks that were dedicated towards Council on Aging senior citizens. And we also lost half of a cardiac screening program conducted by the Hanson Fire Department that last year was able to identify some significant threats, let's say, or potential serious health problems with a number of student athletes. So it does indeed hurt senior citizens, and it does indeed hurt public safety. And that's where we are now. Part of the problem is in Washington, but part of the problem is that we have policy here in this state, unique among the 50 states, where we provide housing. Now, I would make an argument that this being passed during the Dukakis years was designed to assume that during some type of crisis, some type of weather event, we would provide that all of the displaced individuals be afforded shelter at government expense until the short-term problems were resolved. This is quite the opposite. This is long-term, relentless, apparently nonstop, because there's been no let-up in the number of immigrants showing up, and we are running out of space. And there's also an impact regarding housing. I've often thought that you can't talk honestly about the housing problems in this state without addressing immigration.
Mm.
And people don't connect the two often, and in my opinion, they should. But it has become extremely expensive. I will tell you anecdotally, I think one of the things that really twisted the knife in a number of people and really got folks' attention was the reporting regarding the $64 a meal, a day catering for the families that are now in shelters. And as one constituent in my town of Norwell, and several have pointed out and elsewhere during meeting hours, my office hours, that they would be glad to get an extra $64 a week, never mind $64 a day. The Hingham, by the way, I should say, the Brockton Food Bank reached out to us, and us being local legislators, just to let them know they're able to provide meals for families of four for well under $10 a meal.
So is this basically mismanagement by the state in how to provide meals for folks who need it, folks who are new here to the country? I mean, it sounds like the state's just throwing money at it and not spend, there's not a plan to be able to take care of the folks who are coming here and doing it in a manner where it's not overspending and costing as much.
Well, there's two ways to look at that. I mean, my way of looking at it is if we had national leadership, you would address it the way President Eisenhower addressed it, was send troops to the problem area in conjunction, hopefully, with our Caribbean allies, which is, by the way, exactly how President Reagan handled Grenada, get the place under control and return them to where they're coming from. Because 85% of them, last time I looked, the figures were that 85% of them were coming from one country in the Caribbean. Now, I know that has changed nationally, and certainly over the border you have other areas, but here it is 85% from one place in the Caribbean. It is extraordinarily expensive. It has a number of impacts that we don't discuss. Normally people don't think about it, but if you go to an emergency room, you will see what it's doing to an emergency room. I have no shortages of nurses in my district, and when I go door to door, they'll meet them socially. I'm probably here about it right here because I noticed one of our local firefighters is married to a nurse, brought his wife, and I know I'm going to hear about it because she tells me every time I see her about how tied up the particular nursing home that she works at, not being any more specific than that, is just being overwhelmed with people speaking Creole. Simple as that. And it's extraordinarily expensive, and they're not being paid for it.
Mm. I want to kind of, you mentioned housing, and again, knowing that it's a problem, housing for not only the migrant situation, but also here in the Commonwealth, anybody who lives here. What are you hearing in regards to the MBTA, housing situation, communities that live near, that are placed near the commuter rail that have to make sure that they do proper zoning for additional housing near, the MBTA Communities Act?
Well, as one member of the Hanover Planning Board told me, they summed it up fairly well. It's blackmail. And it is primarily driven, my opinion, again, by people who are more interested in social engineering than in creating housing. It is going to be a great, great boon for people who do plans, and they will do plans in many cases that accommodate the law that they have absolutely no intention of ever executing, but they'll have a plan put in place. I should also say, again, my opinion, the folks in Milton deserve a lot of credit for saying no to this and for voting down, and they're going to take some punishment from the state because of that. But at some point, you have to ask yourself: is what the town is being paid worth what they're doing to the town? I we have a great number of places to live here in Weymouth and Quincy, in Cohasset and Hull, in Norwell and Duxbury. But my opinion, if the people in Hanson want their town to remain looking like Hanson, and the people in Braintree want their town to remain looking like Braintree, they should have the ability to do that without interference from Beacon Hill bureaucrats who probably could not find Hanson or Braintree without a map.
Again, we're speaking with State Representative Dave DeCoste. He's joining us for the State House Report, as we have a regular rotation of representatives and senators and constitutional officers who join us on a regular basis to kind of give their take on what's going on in and around the Commonwealth, in their district, and beyond. I know one thing that you'd wanted me to add to the list was gun control. I don't know if we have any updates in regards to any legislation that's in the works.
You bet. I can answer that real quickly.
Okay.
Because everyone asked me about it. And the House passed a bill. The Senate passed a very different bill. The normal procedure is to have a conference committee.
Right.
And the last I asked, which was last week, was that the House has put a conference committee membership together and staffed it. And the Senate has yet to do so. I am not, if I had to bet a week's pay, I am not sure anything's going to be passed, but they surprised me before. And both ways, things that I thought for sure were going to be passed, they could never come to an agreement on. And great legislation, for instance, the governor's dangerousness bill that Rep. Allison Sullivan was such a great and continues to be a super champion of, that took it all the way to the very end, and they couldn't reach an agreement. And other things that I never thought they would enact, driver's licenses for illegal immigrants, they enacted. So I don't have a good record at calling whether or not, but if I had to guess, I'm not sure much would be moved, only because there's so much difference between the two bills.
So, it's early on here in the second half of the legislative session. One would think that if it's something that's in conference committee, it's already kind of, made it through some of the bigger hurdles that it needed to clear. But there's still a chance that they cannot iron anything out by December 31st, that it just ends up dying. Yeah.
But it's extremely contentious. I worked, for instance, on one of our bills for the soldiers' bill, and it was addressing some of the problems at the soldiers' home, and there was a great amount of agreement in terms of what should be done, and that almost did not get passed either, even though everyone agreed something should be did. The focus, I can tell you, over the next few months, I think, will be in the budget, and then summer slows down, people come back. I'm not sure. There'll be an election, of course, so I'm not sure. Number one, there might be some factions that, given the current very rough viewpoints of going on regarding everything else, they may not want to stir up the point on any number of legislation, that being one of them. And number two, they may just not have time.
Anything going on in your district, or anything that you want to mention in regards to ongoings in and around the communities you serve?
Yeah, I'm glad it's good segue from the budget, because one of the things that you and I, and I think everyone else in our area, because I know your community is a great user of the VOTEC. The VOTEC continues to do great things.
Mm.
And speaking of budgets and limitations coming up, there will be an ask for any number of the member communities, and a few will be added, most likely to fund a significant either total rebuild or significant rebuild of the VOTEC plant. And anyone, you want a local good news story where the government is doing everything right, go down to the VOTEC. They are just doing a terrific job down there. But that is going to be to rebuild that. That is going to be a significant amount of money for many of our communities, and they do such a terrific job. I hope we are not in a place a couple years from now when the bill comes for that, and we have to assent to pay for it, that we're not in such a rough fiscal situation that we can't do it or the voters won't approve it. But I would tell you that that is always something that's really positive going on, anything to do with the VOTEC. And oddly enough, housing, we're still making some great moves. The housing authorities locally will be funded a little more healthily, more healthy funding for the through the governor's housing bill. And I think that is one change since I've been elected I've seen. I think more people are concerned about funding our housing authorities. And along those lines, to give you an example specifically, I think you will see the former Holy Family School in Rockland come online. And it has been delayed as a result of some changes that were made by the state government in terms of how it should be built, primarily changing the engineering over to all electric, which means it's going to be a lot more expensive to run per unit. But I think you will see that being built, and some other expansions in that respect, hopefully.
Yeah, and it just a tip of the cap to you talk about such a South Shore Technical High School, the VOTEC in Hanover, Dr. Tom Hickey doing the tour of the nine communities that the VOTEC serves, trying to get an idea of where what the membership wants to do in regards to, like you said, refurbish or completely do a rebuild. If you were to look at, I mean, there's two parts of two different portions of the school, one that was built in 62 and then one that was built several years later. It's kind of tough to distinguish between the two, but it's definitely it has great programs and they do a great job. And again, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say, and it will be purpose built, so the curriculum is going to change a little bit, and so all of the new construction will be designed and built with that in mind.
Excellent, Representative. If folks want to, if constituents are tuned in and they want to reach out to your office and have any questions, how can they do that?
Well, they can always do on the WAT website, ATT website, because I'm always there, and there's always a way to get a hold of all of you, all the state reps there. At least last time I looked, there was. But I am at david.decost@mahouse.gov, or they can go to citizensfordecost.com, and those are two of the best ways. And or tomorrow evening, second Tuesday of every month, I will be at the Hanover Library, the Carnegie Library. I love that library. It's a beautiful library. Hanover Library from 6 to 7 p.m. I have office hours there in Rockland.
Representative, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you somewhere down the road.
Keep up the good work, Kevin. Always good to talk to you.
You got it. There he is, Dave DeCosta, joining us. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, the conversation continues here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD.
Eat, drink, and socialize at the Patio at McWiggins in Whitman Center. Sit down with a specialty cocktail and start your meal off with a patio sampler with chicken wings, egg rolls, potato skins, fried cauliflower, and chicken and biscuits. Watch the game on 7 55-inch monitors while digging into braised short ribs, fish tacos, Fig and Goat Cheese flatbread, or Koji steak tips. Relax and listen to the live entertainment at the patio every Friday and Saturday night. And don't forget, McWiggins Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in downtown Whitman.
Saturday, November 3rd, 1955, Bobby Palmer gets his brand new basketball backboard nailed into place on the telephone pole directly in front of old Mrs. Borden's house. Now, way back in 55, all backboards were metal and located at the park. If you wanted your own, you made it yourself, out of wood. And Bobby's was a beauty. He was 10 years old and handy. The problem was old Mrs. Borden.
You get off my lawn, young man! I'm calling the Brady Police Department! Now you give me that big ball there!
Bobby was not about to give up that basketball. Instead, he gave it a mighty heave at the backboard. The ball hit the rim, shook loose the metal hoop that fell through the windshield of old Mrs. Borden's 49 Hudson.
I'm Peter of Tiny & Sons Glass. 1-888-64-TINYS. We come to your work, your home, replace your windshield, improve your view, and your disposition.
What basketball hoop?
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back. Before we jump back into the conversation, this show would be nothing without the mighty Ed Perry, but also our sponsors, Tiny and Sons Glass, who proudly sponsor the show, as well as McGuigan's Pub and the Patio. I don't know if you know, but this coming weekend is St. Patty's Day, Sunday, and it's almost like a religious day for pubs. And if you're looking for a place to enjoy St. Patrick's Day and be festive, McGuigan's Pub is actually, they get corned beef and cabbage. They're going to be serving it from Friday to Sunday. Tons of entertainment. If you love seeing the step dancers, Maureen Haley's Irish Step Dancers are going to be performing both Saturday at around 3 p.m. and Sunday around 7 p.m. And Sunday, it's a ton of entertainment starting at 11:30 a.m. Dave Try, the Whiskey Ridge Trio, Jimmy Peters, just to name a few. If you want to find out more, check out McGuigan's Pub's Facebook page for all the details. Now we jump right back into our conversation as we talk about some work being done to protect those who are in the rideshare industry, Uber drivers, Lyft drivers, folks who are there in a moment's notice. When you need a ride to get from point A to point B, they're there. But realize that a lot of times they work a lot of hours, and there's not much there. If something happens, if a family member gets sick, they don't have the benefits that if you work a regular 9-to-5 job. I want to first welcome Frank Soltz. Frank, who are you with again?
Thank you so much, Kevin. I'm with 32BJSEIU, which is the Service Employees International Union. And Local 32BJ is mostly a union of janitors and security officers, people who work in buildings largely. But we've also begun to expand out a bit. And in the last few years, we've had a lot of workers at the airport. And that's sort of how we got involved with this.
And so we also have Lionel Andre. He is a rideshare driver. Lionel, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. Good evening to everyone who listen to us. My name is Lionel D'Andre. I came to United States in 2018, originally from Cape Verde. Now I am American citizen. It was all. It was my pride to be American citizen, and it's a pride. It will be a pride of a lot of people living abroad, because freedom and some.
So did you start as? Well, so was one of the jobs that you did, is to be a rideshare driver?
Yes. So I am a Uber and Lyft driver since 2019. I joined the coalition for in this campaign. Because you are working in an environment without regulation. And as a driver, I feel that we need something between us and Uber. Because we, the drivers, we cannot organize ourselves.
Do people understand, well, when it comes to being a rideshare driver, a lot of the costs are on you. You're being paid through an app. You're using your own vehicle. Is that correct?
Yes, of course.
You're maintaining your own vehicle with no compensation, correct?
Yeah, everything is
out of your pocket.
They transfer all the responsibilities from taxis to the all the system, the transportation by taxis to us. You pay. It's our manpower, our gas, our vehicle. And I know a lot of my colleagues, drivers, that live in desperate situation because they finance their car to drive for Uber and Lyft. And I'm here also because I feel like my future is uncertain, because I don't know at when they will deactivate me, like a lot of my colleagues drivers in Massachusetts.
Frank, now talk. My understanding is that the rideshare drivers are hoping not only for legislation that will provide them with protections, but there's also a ballot question that's in the works. Is that accurate?
That's right. But the ballot question is really kind of, to be completely blunt, like so many ballot questions.
Hedging your bets?
That's right. Yeah. We know that it's very difficult to pass any bill, of course, in the State House. And we know that there's a real need, a desperate need among rideshare drivers, among Uber and Lyft drivers, to improve their living situation. Because like Leonel was saying, they face two major problems. One is the deactivation issue, that they could suddenly, almost without notice, just find that they've gotten a message from Uber or Lyft that they no longer can drive because of some issue that they often don't even understand exactly why. It could be a customer complaint. I actually knew one driver who the GPS system had malfunctioned, and it had said he was driving on a harbor island, even though he was picking somebody up at the airport. Mm. And it was a harbor island without any roads, so therefore you shouldn't be there, and they deactivated him. So, and then it becomes very, very hard for them to contest that deactivation. So that's something that they always have hanging over their heads. And the other issue is that they've seen a real decrease. They report again and again and again a decrease in the amount that Uber is compensating them. So for every ride, they get a certain percentage, but that seems to be falling consistently the more you drive. It's kind of ironic. The more experienced the drivers are, they seem to be finding that the less money they're earning, and so they have to work more and more hours just to keep up.
Well, would you, Leonel, how many hours would you say you, when you first started, you found yourself putting in, and how well were you doing? And how has that changed over the years, the past few years, that has led you to want to take action to protect yourself and other drivers?
Yes, I'm driving 12 hours a day and 7 days a week.
Goodness.
Because doing this, my income can help my family to survive. But I know there are people working more than 12 hours a day because they work with Uber app and Lyft app also. And working more than 12 hours a day, Massachusetts law, it's forbidden because you need time to rest. And it should be also a problem, a danger for the riders and for ourselves.
If I can ask you a quick question, and Frank, you if you want to jump in, feel free as well. When it comes to rideshare, are the rules here in the Commonwealth the same as having a commercial driver's license? Commercial driver's license is basically universal in the United States, where you have to abide by a certain amount of hours that you're allowed to drive, and then you have to show that you... I don't think you have to do a logbook like someone who has a commercial driver's license A or B, but are you subjected to any checks like that?
No, because I see that what they happen to make money easy, they don't need the commercial license. Even I think it would be better. The recruiting system is to take people with CD class license and to make money over those drivers. With any kind of training, they put us on the road and you start driving. And like this, they change the rules all the times and they deactivate the drivers for small reasons. I think for the business, for them, it's easier to take people with driver license. And to check if it's possible to maintain the their core business using this kind of people.
Now, have you met with other ride? Have you had meetings with other rideshare drivers who have said, "Enough's enough. We need to do something." How did this all come about? Where you're looking to get legislation, you're looking to hopefully unionize, and for again for, you know, for what you deserve, and where you're not going to have some, you're not going to have, and you know, companies like Lyft or Uber or whomever offers, you know, these services where they can change the rules in a moment's notice, moving the goalposts, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Leonel, of course, has his own story, but we began this well over a year ago, and we joined forces with the Machinists Union, who also have been involved in this, and they've been involved longer, we formed a coalition together with them and a third organization, the Chinese Progressive Association, which also deals with a lot of workers' issues, and they have we're hearing a lot from the Chinese drivers that they were, say, facing the same difficulties that everybody else had been facing for the last few years. And together we formed Drivers Demand Justice, and we introduced both both chambers of the State House, a bill that would allow drivers the right to unionize, because, of course, they are not regular employees, so they don't have that legal right like a lot of other – like most workers do. First, we would have to pass that bill to allow unionization, and the bill also includes ways in which it would be feasible for these drivers to unionize, because, as you can imagine, it's a very atomized industry.
Sure. Are they, as it stands now, to your understanding, Frank, are rideshare drivers not allowed by their agreement to work for these companies to unionize?
That's right. They're not allowed to be in a union until this bill would be passed. But now, one reason that this is being done in Massachusetts that we have, because our union is an East Coast union, 32BJ, stretches from Massachusetts to Miami. And Massachusetts was some place that everybody decided to focus on, because here we have examples where the state has come in and sort of acted like the federal government has the National Labor Relations Board, which acts to adjudicate differences between employers and employees. Sure. But we would make it a state law that would apply only to state drivers. And right now we have two groups of workers who also are not employees who have managed to form these unions where they've seen tremendous increases in their standard of living, both child care workers and home health aides. And those were done in the last 10, 12 years.
We got a few minutes left. Again, we're speaking with Leonel Andre. He's a rideshare driver. He's here kind of talking about seeking justice and seeking rights in order to be able to, if he's sick and he needs to take a day off, that he would be paid. Things that a union can fight for. Let's also make sure we mention United for Justice, the ballot initiative committee that's ongoing. Where are things at with that right now?
Well, we had to collect
100,000?
Yeah, something like that. Yep. Maybe a little short of 100,000, but a lot of signatures. Okay. And that was done over the course of the fall. And we had them certified by the Secretary of State, and we got a letter saying that everything was good. But we have another couple hurdles to go through before in the summer it's finally put onto the ballot. And we'll know what the ballot question number is and everything when we reach that point. So we have to collect another 10,000 or 15,000 signatures, for example.
And it's worth noting that there are representatives, local representatives, in the Brockton area. State Representative Rita Mendez.
That's right.
And State Representative Michelle Dubois, mm-hmm. who are both supporting this bill. I don't know if either one of them have authored or are co-signed on this. What can you tell me?
They've signed on to it, so they've co-signed. And you can see this actually in a lot of the gateway cities where a lot of the drivers happen to live, because it's a very immigrant-heavy population. You see it in Lawrence and Lowell, that a lot of the representatives in those areas are the sponsors of these bills, or this bill.
And have you been given any indication, either of you been given an indication as to where things stand? Because, I mean, it could be presented and then it could just go to committee. And
that's right.
You wait for some kind of determination whether the committee is going to say, okay, we're going to send it on, or no, you might have to do. And I know that happened a few weeks ago when there was some, where there was some legislation that was, you know, put forth that got a little bit of a reprieve and has moved forward. Is that where this legislation,
yes,
where's that at?
We had a very strong hearing in the fall where they actually moved it to the Gardner Auditorium, which is the largest room in the State House, so that they could accommodate it with all the drivers who wanted to attend that hearing. And they thankfully moved it, extended its life, because as you probably know, a lot of the bills actually came up for like a decision early in the winter, and a lot of them just are sent to study, quietly moved, shunted aside for this session. But ours is still going strong until the end of July, and so we're hopeful. We've been building strength. We've been building co-signers, and we're having another hearing. We're hopeful that maybe we'll be able to get together and talk about, as you know, Uber and Lyft are also hoping to put ballot initiatives forward that we think would limit drivers' rights. They would offer sort of a fig leaf.
Like a counter.
Yes.
Mm.
And so we're hoping that we'll be able to, maybe that the legislature would bring us all together to the table and we'd be able to craft something where drivers would finally get the right to have a union.
Leon, if there's anything, we're wrapping up our segment, but if there's anything you wanted to say to the folks who are listening in regards to supporting any legislation or supporting a ballot initiative that would give you your rights and give you, you know, health benefits, anything that would help rideshare drivers like yourself, your brothers and sisters out there.
Yes, you don't have any benefits because also you don't have the regulation in this sector. You have been several times in the State House. You spoke with the legislators there. It was very nice. But we want just one thing, just to pass the law to give us the right to unionize. It's only this. This situation is all workers in Massachusetts have right to unionize. But in my opinion, you need to pass the law to get an entity or an organization between us and Uber and Lyft.
If somebody wants to follow what's going on, they want to learn more, how can they do this? They want to support this.
There is a website called Drivers Demand Justice, which is the website for the coalition. And, please visit us there, and you can keep abreast of the issues. We really appreciate it.
Let's have you guys come back when there's more information to share with our listeners and keep them up to date as on this particular issue. Gentlemen, thank you for coming in.
We'd love to. Thank you so much for the invite.
You got it. Hour number one, gone. Where in the blazes did it go? Well, guess what? Hour number two, straight ahead. Don't go anywhere. You're tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We are back here on Monday Night Talk. Later this hour, we will be speaking with Miles Heeger as he hosts the show Miles on Motorsports. And we'll have a chance to, I think he's bringing in one of his co-hosts who are going to be joining the conversation. Paul Scally will be here as well. We'll talk a little bit about the show, its origin, and maybe I get a little edumacated on motorsports and not just NASCAR. Don't, that's a misnomer. They talk about all different types of motor sports, whether it's the truck series, the Xfinity, there's so much. You got to tune into the show. Trust me. I tune in regularly because Miles and the gang do a great job putting the show together. But coming up in just a moment, joining us is Sean Murphy. He is a candidate for Governor's Council. But I just want to remind you again that we are privileged to be on the air because we have great sponsors like Tiny and Sons Glass. A big thank you to Peter Brown and the gang over at Tiny and Son's Glass, but also McGuigan's Pub and the patio at McGuigan's. Just want to remind you that St. Patrick's Day, this weekend, can you believe it? We're in the middle of March here. If you're somebody who loves St. Patrick's Day, you like the festivities surrounding it, maybe you might be at the Abington St. Patrick's Day Parade or Scituate, wherever you're going to go, you should think about heading on over to McGuigan's Pub. They're going to have tons of entertainment on Sunday. Actually, they're actually going to have Maureen Haley's Irish Step Dancers. If you've never seen these young ladies dance, they do a great job. They're going to be dancing Saturday, doing a performance at 3 p.m., and Sunday at 7 p.m. But there's also corned beef and cabbage. That starts Friday night, right through Sunday, if you're a big fan of corned beef and cabbage served. It's a tradition, and there's tons of entertainment at McGuigan's Pub. For more information, please visit the McGuigan's Pub Facebook page or McGuigan'sPub.com. So joining us is Sean Murphy. Sean, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for having me on.
So for folks who don't know you, other than being a candidate for Governor's Council District 2, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, first off, I'm an attorney. I've been an attorney for about 10 years. I'm a litigator. I spend an awful lot of time in court before judges and clerks. But before I was an attorney, I was a union electrician at one point, but I was also a naval vet. I spent 4 years in the military after high school. I did 2 back-to-back deployments to the Persian Gulf, and I'm looking forward to this run for Governor's Council.
Thank you for your service, sir, first and foremost. What other offices have you held any offices, whether it's for a municipality or somebody, maybe a civic group that you're a part of that you work and you volunteer and do stuff with, or you've been appointed to somewhere?
So I'm a first-time candidate for an actual elected position. I'm a member of the VFW. I'm involved there. I'm also a youth coach, mainly because I have 3 children myself.
God bless you.
I've coached my son 10 years when we lived in Brockton. Now I'm coaching my 2 little girls, which they're doing great. My youngest.
Sports?
Yeah,
basketball.
Okay. Basketball. And my youngest made her first basket this weekend, which was huge.
Solid.
So it was just the very last game, too, so it was great. other than that, I've been involved in a lot of campaigns in Brockton, and I was also we used to work for the city of Brockton under May Carpenter in the law department.
Oh, wow. That's super cool. So you were an assistant city solicitor.
Correct.
What's some of the things that the solicitor's office would deal with?
So what I dealt with in particular was the code enforcement and the receivership program. I was on the quality of life task force. And what would happen is they go around and find dilapidated properties, and we would try to put those into receivership. What that is, and I don't want to bore everybody because it's kind of an interesting
thing. Yeah, just make it brief.
It's basically taking a property, putting a receivership, having a receiver appointed to try to bring that property back within to the local codes and sort of fix it up.
And for folks who don't know, that's a regular occurrence, and seeing blight properties in and around. And I know many administrations, including Mayor Carpenter's Mayor Rodriguez and now Mayor Sullivan, trying to keep the city beautiful, and some people just let their property just kind of be overgrown with weeds and pile things up, and you can't have that.
Correct.
So what made you decide, I want to be a member of the Governor's Council? When did that hit you?
So that's a good question. Mainly the reason is because, like I said before, I'm in court on a regular basis. I go before judges on a regular basis. And maybe I should back up and explain what the Governor's Council does.
Well, that was my next question. So, just tell me why you ran, and then I'll ask you that next question. Because it's almost like a favorite question. Like county commissioners, like when you and I were talking off air, I said that to you. I was like, people don't know what the county commissioners do. And they do a lot, but it's just one of those things that's kind of under the radar.
Correct. So the biggest job they do is they confirm judges. So when the governor wants to put someone forth to be a judge, it has to go before the governor's council to be voted in. And it's the governor's council's responsibility to ensure that the judges are not only qualified, but they're all pretty well temperament, and they would be good candidates to be judges. As a litigator, I'm in court all the time. I've been before a lot of great judges, and then maybe not so great judges. I just want to ensure that we have good judges in our system.
So you've basically kind of just explained it, what they do, in at least a microcosm. Some of the things that I was able to pull up from the mass.gov is, yeah, your judges is one, but also do work with the state treasury, choosing some of the clerk magistrates, public administrators, members of the parole board, the appellate tax board, the industrial accident board. I mean, this is a lengthy list here, and it goes right on down to notaries and justice of the peace.
Correct. Yes, there's an awful lot of positions that have to go through the governor's council.
And the governor's council kind of takes a look at their credentials and sees whether they would be a fit to be able to serve as a clerk magistrate in a particular court, or to be a justice of the peace and serve in that manner per se, stuff like that.
Correct. And what's important to understand is, the governor has another body called the Judicial Nominating Committee that sort of gets in, it goes through these applicants and then puts forward whoever the applicant's going to be. But that body is actually just appointed by the governor. They have their marching orders from the governor. The governor's council is the only elected board that answers to the voters. So they're the real stopgap here. They're the ones that are here to make the decision. Is this person going to be qualified? Is this person going to be a good fit? Is this going to be good for our court systems? And the court systems is really, really important here. And one of the things that, you know, this is a political race, right? This is a partisan race. I'm a Democrat, obviously. And it's going to be partisan. The legislature is partisan. The executive branch is partisan. But one thing I don't want to see, and I don't think any of us want to see, is I don't want to see the judges to be over-politicized, right? The judiciary is the balancing act, right? Whoever goes before the judges, they should have an even shot at a fair decision, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, no matter what your background is. And I think that's really important, that we're ensuring that, you know, judges are going to have biases, but that they can recognize their biases and they can make good decisions despite those biases.
How do you feel that your past experience would be beneficial if you're elected to the seat?
Well, like I said before, I'm an attorney, so I'm in court all the time. But also, when I was working in blue collar, most of my life has been in blue collar. I'm the son of immigrants. I understand what it's like to work hard. And like I said, I'm a vet. And the transition from coming from military to civilian life is tough for some vets. Judges play a very intricate role because right now, more than any other time in our history, we've had more what we call pro se litigants. Pro se litigants are people in court who are not represented by attorneys. The vast majority of people can't hire an attorney to represent them. And what we really need is we need judges who are going to understand what it's like for working class families, for guys coming out of the military or girls coming out of the military, to go before these judges. And it's not just criminal court. There's civil side of things. There's disputes. And judges have to have the demeanor and the background to really understand each side so that when they make a decision, it's well received.
If you're just tuning in, we are privileged to be speaking with Sean Murphy. Sean is a candidate for a Governor's Council, District 2. What are some of the towns? What kind of give me the makeup of District 2, if you could?
So it's made up of 37 different towns and cities. So it's a very big district. It starts in Milton. It goes down through Braintree, which is my hometown, all the way through Brockton, Randolph, down through the Bridgewaters where I live now, to Halifax, and then it shoots way out towards Franklin, Framingham, and Hopkinton. So it's a very big district.
Wow. So is your plan to try to get out and campaign in those communities, put signs out? I mean, you said this is kind of like your first campaign, right?
It is. And mostly I'm just trying to get out and meet voters. I've done a good job so far, I believe. I've met quite a few people, some great people I've actually met, and made connections in areas, municipalities that I normally wouldn't even be in. I'm looking forward to meeting more people. I meet other guys and members of VFWs from other towns. That's great. And I'm actually gaining an awful lot of friends.
And you know, how often do people know what it is that a governor's council member does? Do you find that it's a good enough percentage? I would think it'd be small, but single digits? Is it, 10 to 20, 20 to 30%?
Well, Kevin, I would say when I first started the campaign, which I really just started, in December,
yeah,
trying to get going. Most people didn't know what the Governor's Council was, right? But recently, and with the current events and the governor's last appointee to the...
Yeah, we'll get into that in a moment. Yeah.
To the Supreme Judicial Court, which we call the SJC, more and more people are now saying, well, what is this body that's doing this confirming?
Yeah, let's talk about it. I mean, it was recently the council approved the nomination to the SJC of Gabrielle Woolahosian, the former romantic partner of Governor Maura Healey. What are your thoughts on that? What were your thoughts when you heard this and you're as it's been going through the news cycle?
At first look, the optics are not great, okay? But here's the thing. Judge Woolahosian is probably one of the most qualified judges we have in the Commonwealth. She's been on the appellate court since 2018. She has written thousands and thousands of decisions. She's so accomplished. She's forgotten more about the law than most lawyers will ever know. And what is important to remember here, this is not a jump from like just a political appointment. I understand that she had a relationship with the governor, but it's not like she's taking somebody who's never been a judge, putting them on the highest court or going from a lower court, like a district court or superior court. She was at the appellate court. It's a natural progression that the next court up is the SJC. She's already had a lot of decisions that affect lower courts. And like I said, all the research I did on her, she is absolutely the most qualified to be in that position. And if I was on the governor's council at the time, I would vote her in also.
So you wouldn't have voted any differently. You would have at least heard the arguments and then voted accordingly.
I would, and I understand. Look, the fact of the matter is, judges aren't chosen. And to borrow a line from Judge Lawton, judges are not chosen by a nationwide search. We don't go out and say we don't solicit judges. Judges, people who want to become judges, go and make they fill out applications, they submit it. The fact of the matter is, a lot of those judges are going to have political connections or relationships. To say that they're just disqualified because they know somebody, it would rob the Commonwealth of very good qualified judges. And right now, we have judges that are retiring who are being called back because we can't fill the positions quick enough. And I really just want to make sure we have good qualified judges. If they know somebody, we all go through life. We're all going to know somebody, and I can't take their relationship with somebody else. And those judges are going to be, as I would hope, professional enough to recuse themselves if the person that's coming before them, if they had a relationship with them. They're going to recuse themselves so there won't be a conflict.
So I have to ask you, and that is that this isn't like someone running for state representative or somebody running for a select board where there are everyday issues that the folks would understand and want to hear some kind of... I would think that the issues, if in fact the candidates get into a room and they are to have a little bit of a political forum, that the issues would be different than those of those types of races. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, legislatures make the laws, right?
Yeah.
The judiciary there is to apply the laws with the facts.
And interpret,
it's a different
right.
role.
Right.
And like I said before, you want your judges to be even-keeled. You don't want it over-politicized. I know that this is going to be an over-politicized race, but
You really think so?
Well, I'm just saying it's a Democrats and there's Republicans running. I really believe that we just want even-keeled judges. I have my beliefs. I'm a Democrat, but I'm not going to force those beliefs on somebody else and say, well, you're on this side and I'm not going to vote you in. If I think they're really good and they're going to be able to take their bias and put it in their back pocket and say, I get what my bias is, but to make a best decision for the people in front of me, no matter what their background is, that's what I want.
Interesting enough. Now, what's the length of the term? I mean, is it a 2, a 4, a 6? How long is a term if you are elected?
It's a 2-year term. Every 2 years, you're up for re-election. Yes,
it's like you run a marathon, you rest for a second, you run a marathon again. But are you excited that you're going to see quite a turnout? Well, first you're going to have to face the primary later on this year, correct?
Correct.
And if you're able to get your name on the ballot in November, that'll be even better. Are you anticipating that there's going to be a big turnout, and are you ready for that?
Absolutely, it's going to be a big turnout. I think you said in your last session, there's an awful lot of reps and now senators who are not running for re-election. There's a lot of open seats. So I really do believe the turnout is going to be huge this time.
Do you feel that the Governor's Council can do anything when it comes to how judges are able to, when you're picking judges and their philosophies, being able to put the right judges in the right place to succeed? Does that make sense?
I'm not sure. So,
I guess what I'm saying here is if you've got a judge, you've got a clerk magistrate, you have somebody who's before you that is being, you're going to vote to possibly, put into a particular courthouse. You're picking a judge to for a judgeship. Is that accurate, right?
Well,
is that wrong?
So when you say the Governor's Council picks the judges,
well, you approve.
We're approving the judges.
You're not picking, but you're saying, okay, this individual. What are some of the things that would make you say, no, I don't think this. This person should be somebody who is representing our judicial system.
So I don't know if there's any one issue that I'm going to turn around and say, this is what he stands on. But I think that I have enough colleagues and friends within the industry that if I'm calling them up and I'm saying, look, do you know this guy? Have you had cases against him? What's the demeanor? If the overwhelming response is, I don't know, he or she's been really, really difficult and, maybe doesn't follow through on what he or she is supposed to be doing, I think that might be it. But it's really the feedback that I'm going to get from my colleagues and my own research. I mean, I don't want to say it's one issue because that wouldn't be correct,
Who would you say are, and you can name drop if you want, who are some of your favorite judges that you've been before, or magistrates that you've worked with, and been like, these are people who, if I have an opportunity to approve, these are the individuals that I would like to, see move on. Who are some of the people you've worked with over the years?
So I don't want to. So like Judge Gilday was a fantastic judge. He was out of Brockton. I knew Judge before he became a judge. I think his demeanor is perfect for a courtroom. Judge Neil Horahan is in the district court in Brockton. I think he's just one of my favorite judges to go before. And some of the judges that are gone now, Judge Chaplin was in the housing court. I mean, she's back on a recall. She was about as even keel as anybody could be as a judge. And then I have very good friends who I don't go before because I'm on a recuse list, what we call, because I'm such good friends with my mentor, Irene Bagdoyan, who taught me everything there is to know about the law. She's a judge in Boston. I haven't gone before her, so I don't know how she is a judge, but she's a wonderful attorney. So those are the type of people that I emulate after.
Is there anything I haven't asked you in regards to your run for Governor's Council, District 2, that I haven't asked you, but you feel it's information that you want to share with the listener?
I really just want to make sure that everybody pays attention to this race. It's important. The judiciary is the backbone of our society. And like I said, the other branches of government have their agendas, and they should, because they're politicized and that's how voters work. But we really need to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to get a fair decision in the courts. And that's the most important. And I know I'm focusing on judges. They do an awful lot of things. There's clemency involved in voting on whether or not someone gets a pardon or clemency. This body of government is so important. It dates back all the way back to our colonial days. It was the first checks and balances in our country. And I'd really be honored to be a part of it. And I just hope that everybody will come out on September 3rd and vote for me.
Are you a history guy?
I'm a history enough.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm a history guy. I wouldn't say I would be.
Is there like a certain period of history that you favor?
I like American history. I'm a military guy. I love all the history going back through the Civil War, World War II, stuff like that. I really enjoy those, and especially the Revolution.
Okay. Anything that folks don't know about you want to share a little bit about? The things that you like to do when you're you're not in court, or you're not out being a ref for the kids' basketball games?
I'm a family guy. I spend a lot of time with my kids. My kids are the most important thing in the world to me. But, I'm the son of immigrants. Both my parents are Irish immigrants. We actually lived in Ireland when I was a child. And so I'm looking forward to St. Patrick's Day.
What was that like?
It was different. So Ireland was a very different country back then. We're talking early 80s. And it was much poorer than it is now.
Sure.
There was no highway system at the time. When we were there, my mother wanted to move back to Ireland because to be close to family. Ironically, though, my father wasn't able to stay there. He had to come back to America, and he had to send money back to work. And he was gone 6 months at a time, back for a month, gone. So obviously, it wasn't sustainable, so we had to move back to America. Fortunately for me, I was born here. But it was definitely a different experience. And my father worked really, really, really hard. Interestingly enough, he became a citizen the second he could. My mother, when my mother became a citizen, it was done at Faneuil Hall. She took me in to make sure that I could see it. And it made a huge impression on me. And it was the same place that I became an attorney when I received my certificate and was sworn into the bar, was at Faneuil Hall. So it was just round circle.
If folks want to find out more about you, if they want to get involved with your campaign, how can they do that? Do you have a website or Facebook? What do you got?
Absolutely. Well, they could reach out my website is at www.electseanmurphy.com, and that's S-E-A-N.
I was going to ask, because sometimes people aren't sure and they may spell it the other way.
Right. Or they can also call 508-443-6434.
Sean, I want to thank you very much. Also, a little tip of the cap to our friend Lauren, who kind of connected us and was like, hey, I got a great guy you want to talk to. And she was not wrong. So thank you, Lauren and Sean. Best of luck, and maybe we'll see you down the road somewhere.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate you having me on.
You got it. Wow. We got one more segment left. Don't go anywhere. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Located in downtown Whitman, McWiggins Pub is a fashionable, upscale Irish sports pub with a lively bar and dining room. With all the class of a Boston pub, McWiggins serves a great pub menu featuring favorites like beer-battered fried pickles, Reuben sandwiches, shepherd's pie, bangers and mash, and meatloaf. And of course, they have Guinness on tap. McWiggins is a great place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. With 8 flat-screen TVs, you'll always find yourself in the center of the action of your favorite team. And don't forget the patio at McWiggins right next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in downtown Whitman.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We returned. One last segment. And again, one last time, I want to just remind you, St. Patrick's Day coming this weekend. And we want to, again, thank our great sponsor, McGuigan's Pub and the patio at McGuigan's. And if you're somebody who loves the St. Patrick's Day festivities, I can't tell you. If you've never been over to McGuigan's Pub on St. Patrick's Day, then you're definitely missing out. They're going to not only have the step dancers, Maureen Haley's Irish step dancers, every year. Actually, they're going to be 2 days. They're going to have them on Saturday at around 3 p.m. and then Sunday at 7 p.m. But again, corned beef and cabbage being served starting Friday. And if you're looking for great entertainment and a few pints, Sunday starting at 11:30 a.m. There's all kinds of performances. Dave Pry, the Whiskey Ridge Trio, Jimmy Peters, and much more. Check out the website, McGuigan'sPub.com, for all the details. So we turn our focus to a little bit of a crossover between Monday Night Talk and Miles on Motorsports. Miles is, I've done radio with Miles for many, many moons. So, Miles, welcome. Miles Hegel, welcome to Monday Night Talk. Oh, welcome back, I think.
Welcome back. I've been on a few times.
You have. You're a repeat offender.
Yes.
And who have you brought with you?
My co-host, the dangerous one, Paul Scally, joins
the
us.
Dangerous
one. Yeah, yeah.
Why dangerous. Are you dangerous?
It could be good. It could be bad. I mean, that's kind of... I drive race cars, so I got tagged that one time, and it's never gone away.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to the conversation. I think I've said it. I've said it a couple of times when promoting the show that Miles on Motorsports is more than just talking NASCAR. That you guys cover the gamut of motorsports. We're going to find out more about that. But just want to let folks know a little bit about Miles. I mean, Miles, when did you first? When was your interest first peaked in media and in radio?
Well, probably in high school when I was calling sports games for East Bridgewater, the Vikings in East Bridgewater, and then also that progressed over to working at Whitman Hansen, calling a couple of the football games there. So,
you did a hell of a job
early on.
Yeah, and I mean, what piqued your interest in wanting to like get on mic? And you, at a young age, were you very involved with being an MC and a host and stuff like that?
Well, you know, I have the gift of gab, and I think that, you know, somebody said, why don't we put a microphone in his hands? Ooh. And, you know, it kind of led from there, and, you know, I have a face made for radio, so it... It's just continued on down the gamut.
Yeah, there's a collection of us in this room.
Absolutely.
Face made for radio. What piqued your respective interests in races, motorsports, Paul?
So I've been racing cars since I was 19.
Well?
Yep.
Have you been racing
Okay. And, I mean, I won't tell you how old I am now, but it's, you know, a good 30 years of racing.
Goodness.
And,
you don't look it.
No, I look it. Believe me.
Okay.
And then you know, the next step as I get older and start thinking towards retirement, then, you know, I want to keep promoting the sport. So here I am.
And are you just a NASCAR guy? Are you truck series? I mean,
no. I race locally, and I race in one of the oldest touring divisions in the country. You know, and I race a midget open wheel car with a wing on top, and we race, you know, asphalt tracks around New England.
That's fantastic.
Yep.
What's some of the tracks around New England that you've raced?
Well, I've raced them all at one point or another, but, you know, Seekonk is very local to us, and, you know, Star Speedway in Epping, and then there's Waterford in Connecticut. Those are the closest three to us.
Miles, when did you first get the bug?
1996, 97, watching racing at the time on, you know, ESPN. It was Benny Parsons in the booth. It was just that combination, and I was hooked from then on, and it's just only grown over the years to the point where now we've got a good little radio show going and announcing at Seekonk. You know, I get to watch Paul race down at Seekonk on occasion too, so it's only grown, and it's, you know, it's an acquired niche. But once you get the bug, you're roped in.
Yeah, and speaking of Seekonk, I believe that you have an engagement down there now, do you not?
Yes, Saturday nights, I am with the race voice, Kevin Boucher, up in the booth, and we call the NASCAR-sanctioned action on Saturdays starting coming up in May.
What's that like? What are you looking forward to with that?
I'll tell you. I mean, the sounds of the race cars, the smell, the atmosphere, the environment, it's second to none, and I fell into it a little bit. In a sense, I lucked into it last year and made it work. You know, I got my foot in the door. I was kind of a fill-in, kind of just, you know, learning. Yeah. And about a month or so ago, I got the call that they want me on Saturday nights. So really looking forward to it. A lot of great racing at Seekonk, and it's an affordable, just great, great environment, you know, great local atmosphere to be in. And the racing community, once you're in, you know, they embrace it. They embrace you. And, you know, we've had a lot of folks in the local area really embrace the radio show. Paul's been doing a dynamite job talking it up. It's been a great partnership. We've got a great crew, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, let's kind of talk about it. I mean, how did you assemble this race car called Miles on Motorsports? How did you say, I want to do, I mean, because I mean, for a bit, you were part of the JV
yep.
team. where you would even kind of venture up to New Hampshire and you get sound bites, and it became kind of a thing, almost like the Tracy Ullman show in The Simpsons, where, you know, The Simpsons would be like this 1 or 2 minute thing, and before you know it, became its own thing. Same with you. You've kind of become your own thing.
Yeah, more or less. I mean, I've had in the back of my mind for a couple of years wanting to do a local, you know, motorsports show like that. Obviously, back in the day when we were at the other station there.
You can say, yeah, formerly WBET/WXBR.
Yep. WBMS.
Yep.
So, when I was there, I had my Saturday morning show spotlighting, you know, up and coming country artists from local, you know, around the area. And so the last couple of years working on Jared's show, being part of, you know, being the third host on Jared's show, the racing media and sound bites really piqued the interest and just got the interest growing to the point of, I said, you know what, I think it's about time. You know, we don't have a local motorsports radio show. I mean, everybody and their mother has a, you know, a radio racing podcast, but radio is, you know, a radio station carries, you know, a little bit more weight to it when you're working the garage, talking to people, networking. And so I would say probably we've been on now just over a year. About a year and a half ago, I really got the ball rolling on it, and I knew what I wanted to do. Got the logo, the behind-the-scenes stuff starting to be built, started networking, partnering, talking to partners, had some people interested in on it, invested in, and it's only getting up to speed and, you know, sound quicker and quicker as we go.
Well, it's as you know, it's easy enough to be able to kind of do it, and if you wanted to do it by yourself, you could. And knowing that you have a guy like Tim McKinney, who's also
one of the best,
and he loves NASCAR. But tell me about some of the other voices that are part of the show.
So obviously Paul's here tonight, and Paul and I had always talked about it. And when I started, if you remember, the first 6 months of the show, I was on Tuesday nights, and with the intention of wanting to be on Wednesdays. That worked itself out in July. Obviously, scheduling-wise, we had to change some things. First call was to Paul to see if he'd be interested in coming in co-hosting. Second call was actually one that was pretty easy to make, and that was Ben, who is also, he was an intern here on Tuesday nights, learning the board, going to school, and we got talking off-air throughout those Tuesday night shows. I said, this kid's a wealth of information, and he's a race fan. And so right away I said, hey, you want to be in on the show? And these guys really, you know, they make it 10 times simpler and easier. I mean, we have so much chemistry, and, you know, the guests are falling into our lap. It's the team is really, to me, what makes the show successful. And I wouldn't be half as successful if it wasn't for Paul, if it wasn't for Ben, if it wasn't for Tim.
I was going to say, how does this feel to you? I mean, while it's, I equate it to any sport where you can play the sport and you play it well, but then to try to move on from, once you're like, all right, I'm done with playing. Now I want to be someone who wants to share this information with others and mentor people or share this. Have you found it easy to be able to go from the guy who's, you know, behind the wheel to kind of share an insight about what's happening out on the racetrack?
Yeah, that part was easy to do because of the state of motorsports in general.
Yeah.
It seems as though when I was young, everybody was there and doing it. And now with just the way things are, people don't get as active. And that's, and believe it or not, it's an activity. It's an all-day event. So I see a little decline. Tracks are closing down. And I decided, like, you know, hey, I got to do something to promote it so I can get more interest in it. Because it all starts from a little kid wanting to race, and their family gets behind them, and then they keep racing. So when I had an opportunity to come on the radio show, I was like, you know what? That would be really good to promote the local stuff, because that's what I like to work on the most, is the local stuff. And Miles and Ben were gave me an opportunity, and, you know, they're very technical guys, and I'm more like fly by the seat of my pants guy. So the whole group kind of meshes when we when we get together.
And how important is it to have the sum of all its parts to be able to kind of come together and kind of share this information? Again, I listen to the show on and off as often as I can because I like the chemistry. I like how you guys talk about different drives. I like how you kind of do your picks. We can get into that as well. But I want to go back to talking about Tim. How important is it to have somebody who is a producer in the booth who can chime in and be a part of the chemistry you have with your other two co-hosts,
yeah,
Miles?
And that's the thing. I mean, you know, in radio sometimes there are shows or there's times where we're struggling for content and, you know, you got to pull a rabbit out of your hat in a sense to make sure we cover that whole time. There's no... You know, no worry, no need. Tim is like on point all the time with his info and the research that comes in. And like Paul says, Paul's kind of a shoot from the hip type of guy, where Ben is pretty regimented, and so am I to an extent. But
you like to be prepared.
I do.
You're a prepared guy, and I've seen you prepare and get into a mindset. And again, it's impressive.
Yeah, but at the same time, the meshing. Where Paul might throw on a technical driving question to a driver we have on that I wouldn't think of, or, you know, I'm more of a storyteller in the sense of, you know, the word and the interview. I want the person to tell their story, where Paul is thinking of these, you know, these technical questions, and it just adds to it, you know, and again, it, just the combination of all of us, you know, it's really, really worked well.
What are the types of races that you guys tend to focus on, Paul?
Well, we tend to focus on the local scene a lot. You know, Wheeler Modified Tour, ACT Pass Series, and then also, you know, the NASCAR, you know, the National Series, the Xfinity, the NASCAR Cup, and the trucks. That's primarily a lot of it, but we've been going into Formula One lately.
Yeah,
we've really been getting into some other stuff.
This is actually a good little pitch right here. Chances are we're going to be talking motorcycles coming up very soon, too. Motorcycle racing. I was with...
we did motocross.
Yeah, we've had motocross as well. But a friend of mine last night, we were at one of our sponsors for a viewing party, and we got talking. Her son races the motorcycle tour. Of course, I don't have it on the tip of my tongue right now, but we're probably going to have him on in the next couple of weeks to talk motorcycle racing, and then
the GP.
Yeah, it's one of them. And then also coming up, quite possible, some drag racing as well.
Wow.
So yeah, it's not just NASCAR, and you know, I mean, obviously that's kind of how the ball got rolling here, but it's only grown and, you know, grown leaps and bounds, really.
Talk to me about notable guests. Who have been some of your favorite guests that you guys have had on so far?
Well, the biggest one, Chocolate Myers.
Yeah, Chocolate Myers, that's a good one. That has 22,000 views on our YouTube channel.
You actually mentioned that last week.
Yeah. Bobby Labonte was another good one. One of my favorites early on, prior to Paul and Ben joining the show, was Mark Martin, NASCAR Hall of Famer.
Wow.
This coming week, we have... Stephen Parsons, who races in the Craftsman Truck Series. And we have Rusty Wallace's brother, Mike Wallace, coming on Wednesday night as well. So a lot of different names. But also, you know, the whole networking at the track has helped as well. We ended up having one of the Cup Series hauler drivers on a couple of months ago to talk about what he does on a week-to-week, day-to-day basis. Another one, this is actually an interesting one. I'm not going to let the name out, but we may have a guest of a former Monday Night Talk guest coming on, talking about his racing career as a crew chief. And ooh. Yeah, he's actually been on Monday Night Talk about, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago or so.
Okay.
So that one should be coming in the pipeline. I'm hoping to lock that one up this week, if not next week.
We had Austin Terrio.
Austin Terrio, who's now running for U.S. Congress up in Maine.
Yep.
He's had a pretty good racing career. But we've also had a couple of the older guys, too, who really, you know, ground their teeth. Dave Dion was on the show. That was a great interview. Brad Layton, Andy Santerre, you know, these are all Northeast, you know, Bush North drivers from back in the day. And they carry a lot of interest in, you know, the racing community, getting the stories from these, you know, older guys as well. So it's been pretty cool.
What have you guys learned? I mean, how has it helped you as far as become better hosts and have a better understanding of the sports? Even if you are someone, Paul, like you being a driver, how does it give you a greater appreciation talking to some of these guys?
Well, because racing is a bunch of struggles, and then you get a win. So you can struggle 100 times, and you get a win. And you could be the best of your sport, and that ratio, you lose more than you win. And when you see these guys at, like, the national level, and then when you just hear them tell their story and all the struggles they've had, like, I mean, think about it. Chuck Myers was saying, remember the truck broke down and they didn't even know if they'd have enough oil to make it back because it was leaking oil everywhere? I've been there. And it's kind of like it just makes us all realize that we've been in struggling the same thing and doing the same things. It's pretty neat.
Not being alone. If you're just tuning in, again, privileged to be able to speak with Miles Heger, host, executive producer of Miles on Motorsports, along with his co-host, Paul Scali, here talking, of course, and maybe next time we could have Ben come on.
Yeah, Ben had a scheduling conflict tonight, but he was with him yesterday. He wanted to be here. He's here in spirit with us, that's okay. For sure.
Now, is there any honorable mentions? Because I think I thrown something out to you last week. You had someone who did a report. Who did that?
Yes, so we have Chris Branch with the Branching Out segment.
Fantastic.
And that, yeah, that was another one that just kind of... Chris lives in Connecticut. He's involved in media, obviously, as well. He has his own podcast. He's been in the business. He's, you know, been working the beat in the racing scene, sports end of things. And we got talking. And I said, hey, how about doing like a pre-recorded little segment every week, like 2 to 3 minutes, talking about the stuff we don't talk about every week. The F1, the different series is, you know, that we don't talk about.
Yep.
So Chris has come on now probably the last, it's been probably, I don't know, the last five, six months maybe.
Yep.
And he spices things up and brings some content that listeners get to learn from.
I think it's a nice touch. I've heard it a couple of times, yep. And that's why I mentioned it to you, because like that's a nice little ad, you know what yeah. I mean? It's like, yeah, you have a sandwich, I want a pickle on the side. It's kind of
right.
That's our change up.
Yeah. And
but he's just it's a professional feel, and the image and the information that he's sharing, you're like, wow, this is, you know, if I'm somebody who wants to follow this, you know, I'm getting some great information here.
Absolutely.
You know,
and it's just, again, it's added to the product, and you know, we really all mesh well. That's the best I can say about it.
How has racing changed? I'll ask each of you individually. I know that over the past few years, especially with NASCAR, they've changed, and there's a race within the race, and there's a point system, and a lot of the names that you used to know aren't there. I mean, you get Jimmy Johnson racing, but he's not racing in, you know, the 48 anymore. He's the back part-time. Of the pack most
yeah.
of the times. So, you
yeah.
know, he's kind of like, you know, Sunday driver. Talk to me about the changes, Paul, in racing, especially like the NASCAR.
So I think one of the biggest changes that's happened is in safety.
Cars.
You know, yeah, just the development of safety.
Yeah.
It's all about safety now, which is necessary change.
And gloves.
Yep. Yeah, you can't have the modified gloves. That's always been a rule, though. And then you know, the next thing that is happened is it's all about getting the youth involved. The drivers are getting younger.
Yeah.
You know, NASCAR, they used to all be in their 40s, right? Now when they're in their 40s, they're not around no more. So to me, those are the two biggest changes that I've seen.
I think one of the best things that has come out over the last couple of years is the fact that during the COVID pandemic, where there were no sports on, nothing going on, NASCAR was the first one back out of the gate. They were racing to make up the schedule midweek. And that brought a lot of attention to the sport. It really, really did. And like Paul says also, yes, the racers are getting younger. You look at the Cup Series, you look at the Xfinity Series, you look at the Truck Series. These kids are getting in, you know, a truck at 16 years old, and within 2 years, if they're really good, they're in the Xfinity Series at 18. And safety wise, things have progressed as well. But you don't see the guys back in the day, you had the guys like Dave Marcus, Dale Earnhardt, who would be working on their car. They would get out of the car during practice and be, you know, hey, we need to make this change. Now, these kids are athletes, and they're more – some of them are not, you know, hands-on like drivers back in the day were. But it's still really cool to see where this sport is and where it's going. And, again, even at a local level, if you've never been out to your local short track, get out there. Go to Seekonk. It's worth the price, you know, to watch these young kids with a passion, you know, just looking to make a living. It's fun to watch.
So I'm going to throw out another one, and I don't know if we'll have enough time because I'm sure you probably have a long list, but favorite drivers, whether they're local drivers, they can be regarding the series, you want to throw it out. Let's say drivers from the past, or who were some of the favorite drivers from the past that, you know, wow, you love to watch? Right? Yeah, see, I mean, that's why I'm asking is
I mean, you know, Kenny Schrader. Kenny Schrader's one.
We've had Kenny Schrader on the show, too. You've raced against him, and that's a good, quick little segue. Kenny Schrader races still at 67 years old.
Yep.
And Paul and Kenny battled at the Boston Louis a couple of years ago. And that was just so fun to watch. And the respect afterwards, too, you know. But Kenny Schrader was a good one for sure. And that's a great little, you know, story that you have racing against Kenny, because that was a lot of fun to watch. But for me, I mean, Dale Earnhardt was the guy that got me into NASCAR.
Of course.
Tony Stewart, you know, having met and talked with Tony on numerous occasions, that guy is exactly what you see on TV. But to bring it back to a local, you know, more local feel, like I said, some of the names earlier, the Busch North guys, this past summer I was up at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, and they had in the fan zone a Q&A with a lot of the old Busch North drivers, the Andy Santerre, Brad Layton, Dave Dion, Beaver Dragon, and those guys in a New England level really paved the way. And you see tracks like Seekonk, and you've got, you know, Radical Rick Martin at Seekonk. He's a guy that's been there. This is going to be his 50th year of racing.
Right.
You know, Jake Veneta is down there. Jake's been on our show, too. Little, Ryan Kuhn as well. You
little
know,
right, Bryson Robideau.
Yeah, Bryson Robideau. I mean, these younger kids, too. It's just so cool to watch them progress and develop, but not forgetting, you know, the older guys that were around a couple of years back as well. So it's a lot of fun to watch.
Again, we just have a few minutes left here with Miles Heger and Paul Scali. They are Miles on Motorsports every Wednesday, 7 o'clock.
Yep.
1 hour of talking all motorsports, truck series, Xfinity series, NASCAR. They even talking about dabbling in doing some motorcycle racing. F1, again, Mr. Branch, you have a chance to tune in and check it out. I guess probably the next thing I have to ask you, and that is myself, I think of racing, especially when I've watched NASCAR, the thing that I always find interesting is the crash.
Yep.
And see,
I've had some of the best, just so you know.
and knowing that a crash, I mean, we watched Daytona, right? And Daytona, you know, it was crazy how it changed. How, you know, a crash in the last 10 laps can change what you've watched for 195 laps, whatever it may be. Right. What's that like to be someone who has been... You've been leading. Oh. You're in the top, and then for some reason, somehow, someone gets sideways into you and takes you out of the picture.
It's heartbreaking. You know, I mean, I've had that happen. I mean, many times, a lot. I mean, more than I want to admit. But it galvanizes you to try harder, though. Like, you know what I mean? I always put the blame on me. You know, I'm somewhere I shouldn't be. I'm in the wrong spot. Whatever. So it just makes me want to work harder and improve. That's the way I look at it.
Okay. What do you got coming up for this week's show?
So Mike Wallace, brother of Rusty Wallace, will be on, and also Stephen Parsons, who is actually the nephew of the late Benny Parsons and son of Phil Parsons, who obviously had a pretty distinguished career as well. Stephen's going to be on to talk with us about his schedule. He's running some truck series races for Henderson Motorsports this year, so looking forward to it. Should be some good conversations, and then we'll obviously be recapping the weekend that was at Phoenix and looking ahead to Bristol as well.
Let's also, you also have kind of a little competition amongst you.
Yes.
Where you guys are. Now, what's, is that leading up to something? Is there going to be a Miles Cup or something for the best, the points leader?
We did it last year, the Emma's Pub and Pizza Picks we do at the end of the show. And it's just bragging rights. You know, last year I ran away with it, but this year we're plugging along. It's been a lot of fun.
Again, don't forget to tune in. It's definitely, and I'm not just saying it because they're here, but it is. It's a fun, informative. Miles knows his stuff, knows how to conduct a good interview, and it's informative. You're somebody who wants to find out more about motorsports. It's more than just, you know, taking a series of left turns until someone gets the checkered flag. Exactly. There's a lot more that goes on to that.
And, you know, obviously one, you know, little plug, if you are on Facebook, Miles on Motorsports. And also our YouTube channel, you type in Miles on Motorsports, you'll see our a lot of our interviews from the last year and a couple of months that we've been on.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming in and being my guest. I hope folks learned a little bit about your program, and we'll tune in on Wednesday night. Again, one quick plug before we go. St. Patrick's Day coming up, but get on over to McGuigan's Pub. Maureen Haley's Irish Step Dancers are performing Saturday and Sunday. Tons of entertainment starting at 11:30 on Sunday at McGuigan's. If you're into corned beef and cabbage, starting on Friday, when they're going to be serving it right through Sunday, McGuigan'sPub.com. You've been tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. More show next week at 6:15 p.m. God willing. Stay tuned.